Before we get started with this week's edition of the always pressing PGA DFS podcast, let me let you know that it's brought to you by Draft.com. Fantasy sports fans, listen up. Did you know that your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? That's why you need to try Draft. No more getting crushed by the pros. More than 1 million people have already downloaded Draft. Play in a real live NBA, NFL, or for this podcast purpose, PGA Draft right now. Be done drafting in under 5 minutes and get paid out the day the tournament is done. The PGA version is great. You draft, you enjoy the 4 days, and you collect your money Sunday night. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join them whenever you want. All new players, this is the catch, all new players, when they make their first deposit, get entry into a real money draft by using the promo code SDSports. You got to use the promo code SDSports to get that free entry. That's right. Playing a real money draft for free by using the promo code SDSports. But it gets even better. For some crazy reason you do not like Draft, they are offering a $100 money-back guarantee. Just search Draft in your app store or go to Draft.com and come play for free right now. But you have to use the promo code SDSports. Void or prohibited, must be 18 or older. See website for details. Offer must be redeemed within 14 days. Now, welcome to this week's edition of the always pressing PGA DFS podcast.
Play. Sir. Yeah. Yeah.
Kane is in the building, nigga.
Yeah.
Alright, already the show goes on all night. Till the morning we dream so long. Anybody ever wonder when they will see the thunder? Just remember when you come up.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast, previewing the Houston Open the week before the Masters. Were oh so close. Another great week of PGA Tour action in the books. And in order to preview the Houston Open, we're down one man. Bucks had to take off on last-minute business. No fault on that. Hopefully it goes well for him. But myself and, as always, Jesse. You can find him on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods. We'll break it down for you. Jesse, how we doing?
Doing well, man. Good to be here again.
Yes, sir.
Next week, Bubba, we'll be talking about the Masters.
Yes, there'll be, you know, birds chirping and the winds introducing the show. Not your normal intro music. It'll be a beautiful, beautiful sight. And just can't wait for all the coverage. It's one of the times of years I actually like DirecTV. They actually come through for once. But
that's the only time I don't like not having it.
Yeah, it's the one few times that the majors they've done very, very well, and the Masters especially. Just a channel dedicated to Amen Corner, perfect. Little things like that, but we still have a week to go. So let's stay focused. Let's try to enjoy this week where, you know, you might want to tone it back, but hey, maybe not. We're degenerates. Let's recap the match play that took place. Bubba Watson, folks. Bubba Watson. I want to clarify one thing before we get going. I know I picked Hideki on the pod last week, but that's Monday. And we post Jesse, myself, Kevin, and Rob on Sports Degens, post our OAD through the week. Most of the time it stays the same. My mind changed a couple days later. I went to Bubba. So people wanting to say stuff, pay attention to that. That's all I'm going to clarify. But what was your thoughts on Bubba taking it down, Jesse?
Yeah, that was a nice call by you. I played Bubba quite a bit in my lineups on DraftKings. Not enough, but I did not see him winning, but he just played just pure golf. He was pretty much down the middle of the fairway on the green and making putts. His game looks really, 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 really good. And this is obviously the best time of year for you to be playing your best golf of the year. So it's going to be interesting going into Augusta to see, what his ownership ends up being like on it. But, I mean, you can't argue with the form. Two wins after switching from the old Volvic or whatever he was playing before back to the Titleist. And I guess he's not sick anymore too. So, you know, just really happy for him. He's come back. I like watching him play golf. Don't you?
Oh, I love it. You know, his attitude might rub people the wrong way, this, that, and the other, but when Bubba's locked in, it's great. There's regular golf where you just watch guys pound it straight all day long. And there's Bubba Watson golf where it's like, we're going to do this and that. I know we tweeted it out on the handle, I believe it was Saturday, when he's up against that bunker and he literally like the announcer calls a great, he chicken wings it. You see his arm do this and it misses the lip and curls left, and it was amazing. That's Bubba Watson. When he's locked in, he does stuff like that.
And he's also relatable to me because like he does dumb stuff every now and again. Like he chunked a few shots and he like pulled some putts that he should not have missed. And it's just relatable because he's kind of a head case, but aren't we all when we play golf? So in my opinion, he's one of the funnest golfers to watch because he hits some of the most ridiculous shots that you can hit.
It's ridiculous shots. He's not your typical, you know, you go to a swing school and they teach you X, Y, and Z. He creates it all. He's just that guy. Like you said, he's like us, except he's good. Right. But yeah, he's very relatable, and you know, everyone's got that goofiness about him and the anger and whatever else. So I like watching it. I know he's very controversial to many, but a locked in Bubba to go in with a locked in week we have coming up. Just it's making, we say it week in, week out. I know I said it right before we recorded. Next weekend's going to be amazing. At least on paper, it looks to be absolutely amazing. But before we get there, JT almost the new number one. DJ hangs on one more week. JT looked amazing until the Bubba Watson buzzsaw found him. Any thoughts on JT heading into the Augusta?
Yeah, he was playing really, really well for the first about 2.5 or 3.5 days. I think he just kind of ran out of gas. But he'll be interesting going to Augusta because I like his game as far as he's playing really, really well right now. I don't know his course history there. I don't have it pulled up, but he's just one of those guys who I feel like can win anywhere. It doesn't matter the golf course. It doesn't matter what the conditions are. But he can also blow up. But he's not blown up a lot here recently. He's been playing really, really well. You know, I mean, he's going to get the world number one probably because DJ. What happened to DJ? Did not win a match. I don't even know if he won a hole.
He might not. I know he won a couple probably, but you're not far off from the truth there. He played horrible golf.
I think he shot like 80 the first day, dude. He took, I mean,
It makes me wonder, is it just he didn't care or was he just in a funk is what I'm wondering.
I mean, you know, he didn't lose a match. He didn't trail, I don't think, in the year before. He goes 7-0, wins, dominates it, and then this year, you know, just lays an egg. So it'll be interesting going into Augusta too because, you know, his form coming in is not that great. So will people lay off of him? Missed it last year, obviously, because he slipped down some stairs, quote unquote. So, you know, that'll be interesting. Another narrative streak coming into – or another narrative to coming into Augusta there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You were paying attention. Golf Gurus was keeping track of the different scoring, different, you know, who's got what in the tournament because we've never done match play, obviously. Yeah. And you were keeping close eye on that. What was your takeaway kind of on the DraftKings scoring? Because, you know, the winner was in the 900s or something like that. So it was pretty crazy.
Yeah. So I'm glad that golf tournament is one time per year and we only have to play it one time per year on DraftKings because it was like I seriously almost just said F it and like just left a bunch of dummy lineups that I had in DraftKings. So I ended up doing 150 in the $5 because there was a couple reasons. I didn't think it was going to fill, and it actually almost did fill. But I also knew that people wouldn't get the concept behind the fact that you have to try to optimize your lineups to get four into at least four. I mean, obviously at least four. That's the most you can do. But to try to get four into the final four, and that's really the only way that you're going to win big money. And that's really what happened. There was like at least 20% of lineups who had no chance to get four in. And by the time that the weekend rolled around, there was like 0.5% of the lineups that even had a chance at that point because of all the carnage that went on. But it was really fun from a DFS perspective for the first 2 or 3.5 days. But by the time like the final four was set, it was kind of just like whatever because like there wasn't any movement unless you had a couple. I'm sure people climbed, but I don't know. The scoring too, I mean, the guy who won the $5 scored 970.9 points. which is basically the equivalent of two golf tournaments.
That's crazy.
I mean, two high scoring golf tournaments, you know, I mean, where there's a lot of birdies. And, you know, so it's once a year. If anybody out there knows how to build like an Excel lineup builder where you can put in a bunch of inputs and it excludes people based on those inputs, DM me and we'll figure this out for next year because I need something because it was so hard to build lineups, man.
Well, I can only imagine trying to have to overlap this, that, and the other. I remember the day one, someone was like, oh, yeah, I'm the leader and I have – I think he had everybody that like, could knock each other out, or he had like right. most of it was like in two brackets or something. But yeah, it was fun, but it was one of those like, man, it really takes you out of it quickly. Going into the third day, most of my guys had a chance to advance. And then I think I had Poulter was my only guy that advanced. And I'm like, well, I don't give a shit the rest of the week. goes that.
Normally you get two sweats and DFS golf cut sweat, and then if you get all six, you got a sweat going into the weekend. And even if you have five or four, sometimes you still have a chance to climb, so you're still wanting to pay attention. I mean, I had it turned off I did watch the first couple matches there on Sunday, but I didn't pay attention. I mean, it didn't help that Bubba just absolutely just destroyed Kisner. But either way. I think they need to tweak the scoring a little bit to make it not so high scoring. But if somebody can figure out a good lineup generator, you know, I will pay money for that.
Yeah, no, that's going to be the biggest thing is the generator, and someone will have one. You know they will.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
There'll probably be like seven of them. And then the scoring, because A, it's just insanity, and B, you know, when we have the Junkies League and they have the other like Gups Leagues and everything else, it skews everything out of whack for all these big tournaments that you're playing. You're grinding, and then this happens.
There was some discussion about that today. And, you know, if you're in a season-long league and it counts points, I mean, the guy who's in first now in the Junkies League scored like 800 points and, like, just leapfrogged. I don't even know where he was prior to that. But we were talking about that today. We're either going to have to do something next year different or just play the Punta Conda.
Speaking of the Punta Cana, any thoughts on that? Because it was – I didn't watch a second of it. I checked out the I kept watching the app all day on it, but that's about as far as I got. It was still pretty darn entertaining. But
Bryce Garnett, he was like somehow 20% of lineup. So I put in like 20 – I put in 20 in the $4 and then played a couple $33. But he was so high on, like, and he was nowhere on my radar. So I never had a chance to really climb. But other than that, I mean, it was hard to watch. A, it was, you know, in the Dominican Republic, so they didn't have like all the good camera angles, but they also had like really foggy camera angles because it was raining and windy and it just wasn't easy to watch. But Bryce Garnett, I think, right?
Yeah, Bryce Garnett.
Yeah.
Yeah. He got it done. He's playing at Houston this week. Yeah, crazy. But Martin Flores made a run and fell apart. I'm excited for a second. Kelly Kraft, Corey Connors, who we all said pretty much was, you know, going to be the guy. But it seemed like from everything I was watching on Twitter, it was pretty much just chalk all over the place.
Yeah, so. It was. It was so chalky. It was ridiculous. Even my dude Han, who I mentioned on the podcast last week, this dude Sun Han, and he was 22% owned.
Oh, my God. Yeah, and he finished fourth, I think, something like that.
Yeah, he was up there. He played well, but
just so, yeah, no, it's it'll be interesting to see. At least Tony Romo didn't do crap. That was a good thing. That was really, really good. But last thing I want to talk about real quick was announced today. The Ryder Cup is returning to Hazeltine in 2028, which I got some mixed reviews on that one. What are your thoughts on it first?
Yeah, I'm indifferent, man. I mean – you know, obviously, they just had it there. What was it? Was it last year, 2016?
Yeah.
So that would be 12 years later. It was a good venue. I mean, it was – the crowds were great. I don't know much about the golf course because I've never looked in depth into it. But whatever. I mean, I don't know. It's 10 years from now. I don't give a shit, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I was just kind of hoping they'd go somewhere else. That was the only reason why I was kind of like, well, this is kind of sucks. Like, let's spread the wealth. Someone posted that it's been in basically the Midwest or the North all the time, and even the next few years, it's all going to be in that range.
Yeah. I mean, I'd like for them to bring it back to Valhalla, but other than that, like, I'm not making any Ryder Cup trips.
Yeah, it's not going to make or break my life, but I was just very surprised. Yeah,
with you. I mean, I saw that. I think it was No Laying Up who tweeted that out.
Yeah, it was No Laying Up. And if they're saying it, that kind of says something.
Busy California. Because can you imagine the Ryder Cup in prime time in California? You know what I mean?
I was thinking, think prime time at like Pebble.
Right. I mean, it would be fun. It'd be awesome.
Yeah, or Torrey, or even take them to the Waste Management, leave 16 up. Like,
I mean, that would be crazy. But there's plenty of good golf courses in California or wherever, and yeah. Why they want to stick to the Midwest.
That's where I was confused. But like you said, it's so far away. Who cares? We take this brief break in the Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast to talk to you about RotoWear, one of the greatest shirts in fantasy sports. They have DFS shirts, fantasy season long, all kinds of great shirts. They're the best quality shirts in the industry. No other brand can compete with RotoWear in terms of quality, premium blend fabric, super soft, comfortable, athletic fit shirts, specialized printing process, design as part of the shirt, literally dyed, bleached into the fabric, no thick ink. It's ridiculous the amount of options you can find, over 30 different designs, fantasy football, baseball, hockey, basketball, DFS. They keep coming out with more and more and more stuff, men's, women's, kids, you name it, they've got it. There's lots of buzz kicking up in the fantasy industry about it. People are wearing these shirts. They're representing the shirts. They are great quality shirts. And you can have one too. You can have more than one, as many as you want. Just use the promo code DEGENS, D-E-G-E-N-S, DEGENS, for 20% off your order. Go to rotowear.com or go to @rotowear on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Check out what they have. They're giving away free shirts all the time on Twitter. But when you go to purchase, use the code DEGENS, D-E-G-E-N-S, for 20% off your order. Now back to the Always Pressing PGA TFS podcast. Let's get into this DraftKings action. We got the Houston Open on tap today. It used to be the Shell Houston Open, but I'll let you get into that in your past event history.
Yeah, I don't know why Shell dropped off. I haven't heard that. I didn't even realize that till today when I went on PGA.com and it was just showing Houston Open. But so last year, 2017. It's been played at the same golf course, which is Houston Golf Club of Houston. Sorry, yeah. Golf Club of Houston since 2006. And last year, Russell Henley was your winner at 20 under, by three shots over Sung Kang. Year before that, Jim Herman, 15 under. I'm sure Kevin's Delight won a lot of money that year. Henrik Stenson was the runner-up that year. J.B. Holmes in 2015. Matt Jones, the Australian, 2014. D.A. Points and Hunter Mahan for the last couple of years. Phil Mickelson has won here. Paul Casey's won here. Adam Scott's won here. But only Phil in that bunch I just mentioned is in the tournament. So pretty weird bunch.
Yeah, it's an odd bunch that have won here. And when we get to the field, it's kind of like a definite stars and scrubs approach this week. Yeah. So I'll give it into you with Bucks out. He sent the course preview our direction, and I'll do my best to read it properly to you. But it is the Golf Club of Houston, as you said, 7,400 yards. So it is kind of what you're hearing. It's a bomber's paradise, but you don't have to be a bomber to win here, as you already stated. Par 72, the greens are Bermuda and bent mix overseed. Very, very fast, or on 13 on the stem to resemble Augusta. That's the point here, is the roughs and everything. It's Augusta light. It gets guys ready for the Masters. Your average winning score is minus 16. Weather looks to be very, very nice this week, so not too much to worry about there. But as we get into the course some more, they've been here since 2003, as you mentioned. It's first 3 years on the member course. It was then moved to 2006, the tournament course, and has been here ever since. Some of you may remember this as Redstone Country Club till a few years back when they changed the name to Golf Club of Houston. Before getting into the course specifics, it should be noted that they tried to get this course playing as similar to the Masters as possible, as we already stated. They cut roll the greens to the stem around 13 or higher. They shaved down collection areas, banks around the ponds and bunkers. Being the week before the Masters, they have to do this to attract any sort of reputable field. This course is good, is another good one. It ranks in the middle of the pack as far as difficulty, but it can definitely show its teeth if you aren't striking the ball well. It has over 40 fairway bunkers, and water comes into play on 11 of the 18 holes. Finding the fairway is a must to score well on this course, but it also helps to find the right positioning in the fairway to attack certain pin locations.
There are quite a few pin locations that are extremely difficult if you have positioned yourself well off the tee. Once you do get off the tee, the greens have plenty of rolling undulations and runoffs that will require fantastic short games and imagination. The tour players are obviously elite, but they don't see too many courses each year that will have the runoffs shaved down like they see this week, again, getting ready for the Masters. Your hole-by-hole breakdowns, you have par threes. There's four par threes. They average just over 200 yards, so not too bad for PGA standards. Two par threes, the players will be hitting 7-iron, 6-iron into. Two of them, they'll be hitting 4-irons or longer into. So it's kind of a mix and match of par threes. Par fours, there are 10 par fours on the course, six under 450 yards. That's why you don't have to be a bomber here, but it does help. But there are four over 450 yards where the bombing comes into play. The interesting thing about this course is that you see a plenty healthy mix between wedges and long irons in the greens. And par fours, on par fours, the average shot in will be 145 yards. Par fives, there are four par fives, the average being 575 yards. Every single par five plays well under par, and players have birdie or better percentage on these of up to 34%. While accuracy and placement off the tee is essential, par five scoring is huge as well. The fifth hole is the most difficult hole on the front, displays what this course is all about. Demanding tee shots, precision into the greens, and imagination around the greens. 22% of players make bogey or worse on hole number five. On hole 12, it is a very awesome hole, a drivable risk-reward par 4 that yields a ton of birdies but also can bite your hand. Expect those guys a few shots back heading into the back nine on Sunday to take a swipe at this green. The 18th finishing hole, this is one of the great finishing holes on tour. Much like 5, it requires length and accuracy off the tee and precision into the greens. Also notice that the shaved banks on the pond, woof. Expect to see a lot of bailouts right near the fairway bunkers. I fully expect to see the tournament won or lost on this hole. Here's your stats. The stats Bucks will be looking at, and then we'll get into Jesse's here in a minute. But he'll be looking at his normal weekly DK points, birdie or better percentage, bogey avoidance, recent form. And then specifically for this tournament, he wants his driving accuracy, total driving proximity of less than and then 125 yards and in, par 5 scoring. And that pretty much wraps that up. Jesse, what stats are you looking at?
Yeah, course history, plays a factor this week, so I'll definitely factor that in. But looking at a lot of greens in regulation, that's got a good correlation to guys who have success on any golf course, but in particular this one, and driving distance as well as birdie or better, because it can get into a birdie fest. Now, it depends on kind of what the weather does. Did he include a weather report there?
Basically said it's going to be sunny and clear and shouldn't be too much of an issue.
So not a whole lot of wind this week?
Not that he's seeing yet.
I'm looking for bombers who are throwing it on the green, giving themselves some chances, some looks.
Yeah, most definitely. That seems like the right way to go about this. With that being said, and I agree, past history is big for me. Guys trying to compete to get in will help. I already mentioned it's kind of a stars and scrubs approach. So scrambling, par five scoring do come into play here. And minus 16 being the average score, we will see some nice low scoring to enjoy this week. Let's get into the DraftKings, Jesse. At your 10K and higher range, if my computer will load, I will get this for you shortly. I know we have Ricky Fowler up top. You got Jordan Spieth, Justin Rose. Phil Mickelson's even at 10-2 this week, which was very kind of surprising to me, but I guess not the end of the world, as he's been playing some great, great golf. And the last member is Henrik Stenson at 10-5. Who are you liking up in the 10K and above?
Yeah, this is a week where I could see, like, any one of these five kind of breaking out and getting the win. Stats-wise, like, Rose and Mickelson are on the top. Ricky has some really good course history here, though. He finished third last year, 10th the year before, has another sixth back in 2014. So he's made the cut every time he's played here. But at 11-5, you really almost need him to win. And his form coming in is just so weird with a 14th, 37th miscut, 11th miscut. And before that, he was fourth and second, but that was the tournament champions in the OHL back in November. So recently, he's just kind of been blah. So does that lead to a lower ownership If it does, then I would probably be more inclined to play him. But either way, I think Rose and Mickelson are the two plays up top.
Yeah, I do like Rose quite a bit. He just keeps playing just amazing golf. He's like a top five machine these days. So I definitely do like some Rose when I'm looking at this. But the guy I'm looking at in this range, and I know he's always very tilting, but he showed much, much better form his last time out, and that would be Henrik Stenson. I think he goes overlooked in this little pack here. He finished fourth his last time out after that missed cut that kind of made people angry. He has great finishes here. Missed the cut last time out, which I think might lower his ownership as well. But prior to that, a second, a T54, and a T2. So three of his last four events he's gotten T2 or basically better in theory. So I do like Stenson quite a bit at 10,500. It's kind of a pivot play. I think Mickelson will get some attention, and I do like Justin Rose quite a bit. So that's where I'll be looking at 10K and above. In the 9K range, we have Luke List, Daniel Berger, Rafa Cabrera-Bello, Russell Henley, Matt Kuchar, and Tony Finau. It's very mixed match of players here. You do have some definite bombers, and then you have Kuchar. What are you looking at here, Jesse?
Yeah, there's a couple, three. Again, it comes down to ownership for me here because I think I don't know how people will react to a $9,600 Luke List. That's a steep price tag on a guy who is normally in the sevens. That'll be interesting to see. But he's 7th, 16th, and 2nd his last three golf tournaments. And he was 3rd here last year. So if he's chalky, I don't want any part of Luke List. But if people are saying that's a terrible price, then I would be more inclined to play him. The other two or potentially three, Rafa at 9,300. He did miss the cut here last year, but was 4th the year before that and is coming off a 3rd in Mexico. And then Tony Finau, his course history is not that great here, but eventually he's got to do something. Not a terrible price at 9,000. Another guy I would take a look at too is Kuchar. He flashed a little bit of form last week at the match play where he was kind of just mediocre at best, and he actually made it out of the pool play or whatever into the round of 16. So he looked better at 9,100. He's made about a billion cuts in a row on tour, so it might be a good cash game play if that's what you're looking for.
In this 9K range, definitely screams some very interesting plays. Kuchar definitely cash game wise, but I don't know. To me, he's just pricey for a GPP because he just doesn't have that finishing power that I expect out of Kuch, even though he's played very well at this tournament, which I agree with what you're saying. There's two guys, or there's a few of them looking at here. Luke List, I completely agree. People might go, what in the heck is this price tag? But we've said it the last few weeks, and we've mentioned on some fan share segments, Luke List has just been lights out. Outside of that T59 his last time, a T7, T16, and a second, and he finished T3 here last year. So he's played well here, and he's coming in really, really good form. So I don't hate Luke List, but the guys I'll be looking at, Daniel Berger at $9,400. This is a course that Daniel Berger just loves to play. We're talking past event history here. He's 3 for 3 on made cuts, 3 top 25s, 2 top 10s. He finished 5th here last year, T5 the year before, T25 the year before that. So he's been very, very good at this course. It's typical Daniel Berger. He can really tilt you at times, or he's a top 15, top 10 machine. So at $9,400, I do like his ability on this course to make some noise. The one that surprised me at first when I saw his price was Russell Henley at $9,200. But then you look at it, 5 of 5 cuts here, all four of he has 4 top 10s, including a victory, which was last year. He's the defending champion. Then he was T5, 4th, T7 his last 4 years. He's been inside the top 7. So some guys just have courses that fit their eyes, and Russell Henley appears to be that guy. I'm curious the rest of the week to kind of hear the narrative on, how popular he's going to be, because I'm not the only idiot that can see that he's finished well here over and over again. So if for some reason he stays low, I like the idea of him at 92. He can be that kind of pivot, because Kuchar is a guy that everybody loves. And at $9,100, people might think he's cheap and they'll run there. Or Finau, $9,000. Very great price for a guy that we've talked about is due to eventually going to find that winning way and be one of the next big forces on tour. So if you can get Henley at 92 and get him overlooked, I like that quite a bit. So Berger and Henley are kind of be the two I'll look at here. list, I agree with you, depends on ownership.
Yeah, I mean, with Henley, too, you know, he was $8,700 here last year. So not a huge price increase. His form coming in is kind of mediocre, but he was 18% owned at that $8,700 last year. So it will be interesting to see, because a lot of times people don't think the guys can go can win consecutive weeks or win back-to-back tournaments. But, of course, at $8,900, you don't really need him to win. You just need a top 10 out of him.
And that's one reason why I know we talk about it a lot, and it seems like most weeks ago we'll talk about the 10K and above, and then I know I do it a lot. I know you do it a lot. It's like I'm going to start in the 9,000s because I like to build kind of that team where I know they have the chance to win. At worst, they're going to top 15 for me, and I don't need them to win based on their price. And I could build a stronger team where I don't have to rely on like three guys in the 6K range to save my day. Right. So that's where I like this kind of range. You can mix and match. Another range that we like to mix and match in is this $8,000 range. We got Chucky Three Sticks, $8,900. It's about the last event where he actually matters because he's leaving Texas and California, and we know it goes downhill from there. Steve Stricker at $8,800, Benny On at $87, Keegan Bradley finally getting the price bump he has deserved at $8,600, Earl at $85, Sharma, Duffner, Colley, Rogers, and Brant Snedeker. The guys I'm looking at 8K, Jesse, I don't mind CH3 at $8,900. He has played insanely well at this course. I mentioned this. You know, we all know this is what he does. He plays the West Coast in Texas. He's made 8 of 10 cuts here, including 3 top 10s. He's been top 10 or better in 3 of the last 5 years he's been here. So he's played very, very well. And his form is very, very well coming in. He finished T9, T14 his last 2 events. So there's a lot to like about Chucky Three Sticks. But Keegan Bradley, this is the guy I'm targeting. And I'm afraid the name has been thrown out there way too much lately. 6 of 7 cuts here, 3 top 10s, including a T15 last year, 4 straight cuts on tour. He's not the guy that's going to light the world on fire for you, but at $8,600, he's a cut machine. And he has the potential to finish top 20, and that's what I'm looking for at this price tag. And then Duffner at $8,300 continues to get it done. He's putting very, very well, and people keep waiting for the putting to stop, but it hasn't. And he finished very well at the match play, one of his better finishes there. He lost in a playoff, T17. He finished T12 here last year. So there's a lot to like about Duffy at $8,300. He might be chalky because, to me, that price is too cheap for him, unless I'm missing something there. But those are the three guys I'm kind of looking at in the 8K range. What say you?
Yeah, there's a lot to like here. Really odd to me today whenever I pulled up my model from last year, and Steve Stricker was at the top of it, of all people. I'm guessing it's because he's been playing so well on the Champions Tour, but either way, it's kind of weird to me. And at $8,800, I would think – he would go pretty low owned. I don't know how much I'll play of him, but I think he's got some potential angles to play in like a GPP because he shouldn't be that high owned. I wouldn't think anyways. Ben On is another guy. He's been playing really well except for the one time that I played him at the Valspar. So played him at the Valspar, missed the cut, faded him the next week, 14th at the Arnold Palmer. That's with a 5th, a 23rd, and a 6th this year. So he's got some really good form. Don't mind that price at all. Another guy who I think is interesting is Bud Colley. Obviously, he WD'd 3 tournaments ago, then missed the cut at the Valspar, but then somehow flashed and formed Alan Palmer and finished 14th, and that was with a 73 playing with Tiger on Sunday. He's got some decent course history here, missed the cut last year, but 16th in 2013 and 8th in 2012. So he has played well here in the past. So he's interesting because I think that this bottom range, basically Colley, Rogers, and Sneds will be the lowest owned of probably anybody within like $1,000 of them. So, or not like $1,000, probably $500. So if you go 500 each way, I think these guys will be pretty low owned in comparison to several, especially if you go up 500. So it'll be interesting, but I think Bud Colley has some GPP potential there.
Oh, Bud Colley is always one of those guys that you look at that can really burst onto the scene or tilt you, kind of like a Lucas Glover to me. I kind of feel the same way about them. But you just mentioned Patrick Rogers is in this group. Since we're getting into the 7Ks now, we're going to see a lot of names for the rest of the deal that played last week in Punta Cana, and some played really, really well. Now, Patrick Rogers was one of the chalky guys there last week. What is your thought on these Punta Cana guys ownership wise? Do you think they're going to be chalky because they're fresh on the mind, or are people going to avoid them?
I think so. I think last week, the way that I look at last week was, it's only your diehards playing that Corrales tournament. Like, so there's not a lot of general public out there playing that tournament because they were all steered towards the WGC and playing the match play and the bigger prize pools and $100,000 up top. And there just wasn't that last week. So I think it was a lot of diehards, people who are in the industry, you know, and I think that had a lot to do with ownership. So I don't think that your normal Joe Blow guy is going to look at Patrick Rogers and know that name. And a lot of these other names, they're not going to look at him and know that name. So I think they'll be back to their normal, you know, max and 15%, probably closer to 10% ownership.
That sounds about right. All right, let's get into the 7K range where it's loaded, especially at the bottom of the 7K range. I'm not going to name all these guys off. What are some of the guys you're looking at here in the 7,000s?
Yeah, so going along with that narrative, there's two guys, one at 77, one at 76, Han and Connors. Yep. Both played last week. This Han cat, I have no idea where he came from, but like all he's done, all he does is like play well. I don't understand it. I haven't done any research into him. I'm just going to keep riding him because he's playing well. He finished fifth last week in the Dominican Republic. He kind of had an okay weekend, wasn't that great, but I mean, you know, fifth down there in his first, what I guess it is his first PGA Tour event. I don't have anything other than that. And then Connors too. He played well, didn't play very well on Sunday, shot 76. He's just like one of those guys who hasn't learned how to play Sunday yet, I don't think, because I think he was in that final group or he was pretty close to it either way. And so that, I mean, it's just, we'll see on Connors, but another couple few guys. I mean, this is, you can go on and on and on and on in this region. Love Lady played last week. Nobody will know him. He should be low owned, finished fifth. Now that golf course last week was playing 7,600. Of course, this one's playing 74. So it's a little bit shorter, but a lot of these guys match up really pretty well. Fratelli, is another guy who interests me at 7,400. Kokrak, 7,300. Has some sketchy course history, so he'd be GPP only coming off the missed cut at the Arnold Palmer where he was more chalky than what he should be ever at 16%. I mean, the guy should never be more than 10% owned. And so he should be back down to normal levels, and I can see him having a good bounce back week this week. Reavy, we kind of got into discussion a little bit with a guy on Twitter earlier today about him being potentially chalky at this level. I just don't know if I see it or not. Because I don't think he'll line up with a lot of stat models that people create. And so he could be kind of sneaky. Now, he may not be, but I like him because I think he's got the ability to compete even at these longer golf courses, and he proved that in the Cali Phoenix swing there. Other than that, Poulter, going back to him this week, a pissed off Poulter because he thought he was in the Masters and he's not. Streelman at 7,200. He's kind of just a staple in my lineup. So just a guy who I just love to watch miss putts on a Saturday morning. and so I'm sure I'll play him. Another guy who, you know, you might be like, what the are you talking about here? But KJ Choi. So hear me out.
Yeah, what the hell are you talking about?
So doesn't have very good course history. Two straight missed cuts here. He's made the cut two out of five times since 2008. But he finished fifth in Corrales last week, and there's potential that the only reason I was following him is because I know the guy who's caddying for him. So I'm just interested to see how he's doing the guy's caddying for him is a pretty good friend of mine. So I'm like, you know, hoping he does well that way. My buddy does well. But he played well last week. He shot 67 on Sunday – or 66 on Sunday, excuse me, on a long golf course, which you don't really think with KJ Choi. So I think he's a super deep GPP, large field GPP flyer if you're playing in a whatever the biggest GPP is out there this week. You know, maybe put him on one lineup and hope and pray. Two more guys, and I'll let you – Paul Dunn and James Hahn, both at 7,100. Hahn, I think, is way underpriced at 7,100. with his ability and the way he's been playing. Done. Another guy finished fifth last week. So I'm just trying – I'm just hoping that some of these guys are kind of getting some confidence after that after that deal in Puerto Rico or Dominican Republic, and they can translate that into a better finish. Another guy at 7,100, and I'll let you go, Martin Kaymer. Terrible course history here, but at 7,100, in my opinion, he's worth a lineup or two in a GPP.
Let's look at the 7K range. We got Connors at 7,600, who I do like quite a bit. He's coming off of T13 and T16. And outside of that, we got the likes of Tomas Peters, who plays very, very well, but can also be very tilting. Quite the bomber type that we know about. He's first time, I believe, at this tournament. Yes, first time. But we know what we get if we come watch people, so I don't mind that at all. Chris Kirk coming in well. A guy at 7,500, I think he might get some good love from. It's Scott Piercy. He's 6-6 on touch here. Last two times, T19. So I do like that quite a bit. A few other, you mentioned Fratelli. If you want to play our guy that's tilting his health, $7,300 for Jamie Lovemark. He's actually coming in playing really good golf. He's made two straight cuts here, including an 18th, and he's made at least five straight cuts on tour, so he's playing very, very well there. Johnny Vegas and Ches Reavie at 73 are too cheap for me. They're, you know, top 50, top 60 players in the world down here at $7,300. It doesn't make sense to me at all. I like Steels at 72, Bucks guy Steve Mitchell at 72, coming off the second place. Then you mentioned Conn at 71. I do like a lot. He's playing actually really good golf. I remember last year, I thought he was playing golf. I got on him, and he shit the bed. So hopefully he doesn't this time. But T49 here last year, and he's coming in great form. And then the other guy I do like is my buddy Johnny Hook at $7,000. Four or six cuts made here, including two top 25s. T26 last week. Outside of one missed cut, he's basically been T26 or better in three of the last four tournaments. So at $7,000, that's outstanding. I will definitely take a liking to that. Let's get into the 6K range, Jesse, where we have another handful of guys to check out. Who are you looking at down here?
Yeah, it's a strange region, but there's a few. Nick Watney at 68. Yeah.
Yeah, 68.
Computer malfunction here. 6,800. Missed cut last year, but he's playing some pretty good golf. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 straight made cuts on tour. So he's worth a shot. My boy Schenk, 6,600, definitely worth a lineup or two at that price. He didn't play that great last week, but he has made three straight cuts on the PGA Tour. So there's something to be said for that. And last but not least, kind of gearing up for the Players' Championship. Keep this guy's name in your head, Blaine Barber. He finished 16th at the Valspar. He's super sketchy, but when you get him on, these are Bermuda greens, correct?
Yeah, Bermuda. It's a mix, Bermuda green. Yeah.
Well,
yeah, he's good.
Done all right here. He made the cut in 2 or 3 years. So, if you're looking for somebody, you know, that's cheap and should be low owned, you know, I mean, Schenk and Barber free up a lot of space.
Yeah. I don't hate that at all. I agree. Watney at 6,800 bucks. That's a guy I've mentioned the last few weeks in these price ranges. He's playing way too well for that. You mentioned six straight made cuts. And the thing I love about Watney and some of these guys that I really target in the low sevens and six is the past history. I want that guy that's comfortable playing here, making cuts. He's made four or five cuts here. His only missed cut was the last time he played here, but he has two top 25s outside of that, including a T27, so almost three top 25s. So he does play pretty well here. Some other guys that I do like down here. Bo Hostler is always a very intriguing name to me. He's at 6,900 bucks. You know, he's hit and miss. He's a youngster. He's made one cut here in the one time he played last year. So he's on the radar. A guy you talked about, Kevin, earlier with his Herman call, Johnson Wagner. It's the guy he likes. Wagner's made 8 of 11 cuts here. He has one here. He has three top 10s, four top 25s. He's made three straight cuts, including a T2, T13. So Wags at 6,900 bucks is definitely on the radar. He's made two straight cuts on tour as well. Another name we mentioned a lot, Van Aswagen. Tyler Van Aswagen He's been making cuts pretty regularly on tour. He's made three for three on cuts made here. So those are the main ones I'm looking at. There's a few others. This lower range actually has some really good cut makers that have had good history here. Ben Crane, H3-3, Tringali even. I know we hate Tringali. I was shocked, Jesse. He's 7 for 7 on made cuts here, including 3 top 10s.
Yeah, that's
it's a hard one to swallow.
Get all in one last week. So
yeah, so yeah. It's hard to swallow. But some of these guys, but HP3 is 67. I like your Shank call, Watney, and then a couple others in that 69, at least worth checking out. All right, that takes us through the 144-man field. It does suck. I saw some conversation today because they had some qualifiers making. Of course, DraftKings led us out there. Like Julian Suri made the field. We love playing guys like Julian Suri. We could have got him nice and cheap. So that really sucks. But what are some of the punts you're looking at this week, Jesse?
So Blaine Barber would be one. Shank would be the other. I don't know about Tringali, though.
Oh, I'm not going to play him. I just wanted to bring up the fact that 7 for 7 cuts from that guy.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, yeah, that's obviously really – well, he actually missed the cut last year. I've got a missed cut in 2017.
No, the thing I use all the time has him 7 for 7 with 3 top 10s.
Oh.
Interesting. Well, there goes that. But, yeah, my punt's Watney. I do like your Shank call. If I got to go someone else outside of that, I'll go with Bo Hostler at $6,900. Dude. Who are your busts of the week?
Busts. It's tough.
It's very tough.
I mean, because if I say Spieth, he'll pull a Rory and win. so I'm not going to say Spieth. I'm going to say I really don't know. I'll go with Stenson.
I like Ricky to bust, but that's too simple at that price. So I'll go a little off the wall. I'm going to go Matt Kuchar.
Kuch.
I think he has a rough one, even though he's done so well here. And I'll probably regret that, but that's where I'm going with that. Who are your core players for the week?
That's a great question. And I was looking at that question.
This was my hardest week to make a core, I'll be totally honest.
Like I'm sitting around going, like, what do I actually do here? Because I think it might be a Stars and Scrubs type of week where I take some shots down low, but I just don't know for sure. I do like Rose quite a bit. And it's not, obviously going to come down to ownership for me because I was looking at ownership last year and there were so many busts in the up top there. Like it was pretty outrageous. So I might try to avoid just everybody who I think is going to be chalky and just – try not to be because Spieth missed a cut, Stenson, who else? Scott missed a cut last year, JB, Cooch missed a cut. I mean,
well, we also got to be kind of hesitant. If they have a bad Thursday, what's to say they just don't give a shit and just go straight to Augusta?
Yeah, that's oftentimes a narrative, but I kind of feel like they would just do that. They just wouldn't play if that was in their heads. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They all know that they're not out of it just because they shoot. You know, 75 on Thursday and are 6 shots back. They know that like these guys are good enough to make runs. So
I don't know. And I'm not going to say it happened. I can't remember who posted it, but they showed that narrative out there a lot, and it really doesn't happen as much as people
think. No, it doesn't.
All right, my core for now, because this is very subject to change. I agree. When I made my list of players, it could be really Stars and Scrubbing. That's not my style at all. But if I am looking at it, Berger, Keegan Bradley, and James Hahn right now would be my three-man core if I had to pick just one core.
I like it.
All right. Who is your pick to win? Because this one seems kind of like a wide-open week.
Yeah. I don't have the odds pulled up yet, so let me get those pulled up. But just looking at kind of some of these names, I'm going to go with – the winner is List wins.
Oh, I don't hate it.
I just don't know.
There's a handful of guys I'm like, okay, I could see that. I could see that. The one I'm going with for now, and again, everybody check out our OAD piece later this week. It might give you a better idea of who we're targeting for sure. And Jesse's weekly piece of his DraftKings preview. But mine will be Daniel Berger.
The burger's at 25 and Liz is at 25. I'll put five a piece on him.
I like that. I like that. 25, we didn't go with straight chalk, homie. I like it. That's pretty good. All right, man. Well, that was quick, simple, and harmless. Any final thoughts as we are just 1 week away from the Masters?
This week is what last year I think was pretty crazy from a like DFS perspective. So, you know, if you're really wanting to hammer Augusta, you may want to hold back a little bit. But I mean, if you don't care, let it fly. I mean, this is a good week, I think, to go and be a little bit different. So that's what I'm going to try to do.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a week. Maybe save a little for Augusta, but at the same time, that might be a narrative a lot of people use. So take advantage of it. We'll see. All right. But it is a very weird week, stars and scrubby type field, and I'm hoping some scrubs make it way, way more interesting than it might be. But with that being said, you can find Jesse on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods. The podcast is at Always Press DFS. You have Bucks on Twitter at BP Snow 11. He'll be rejoining us for our Masters preview that we do next Monday night. And I am on Twitter at BD Intric. Thanks for listening. As always, this was your 2018 Houston Open preview, Always Pressing PGA. The show goes on.